road. Yet she'd said nothing, and he wondered if Rhys had given her a silent command. Cassian filed away his curiosity about why Rhys might have felt the need to do such a thing. All right, Rhysand, Amryn said, tucking one foot under her thigh. Tell me why I'm here before breakfast, while Varian is sleeping soundly in my bed. Rhys pulled back a black canvas tarp that had been over part of his desk.
We're here because I got a visit at dawn from a blacksmith out by the western edge of the city.
Cassian went still as he saw what lay there. A sword, a dagger, and a longer greatsword, all sheathed in black leather.
What blacksmith?
Rhys leaned back in his chair, crossing his arms.
The one you and Nesta visited several days ago.
Cassian's brow furrowed.
Why did he bring you those weapons? As a gift?
Asriel leaned forward, a scarred hand reaching for the closest sword.
I wouldn't do that,
Rhys warned, and Az halted. Rhys said to Cassian,
The blacksmith dumped them here in an absolute panic. He said the blades were cursed.
Cassian's blood chilled. Amryn asked, Cursed? In what way?
He just said cursed,
Rhys replied, motioning to the weapons.
Said he wanted nothing to do with them, and they were our problem now.
Amryn slid her eyes to Cassian. What happened in the shop?
Nothing, he said. He let her hammer the metal for a bit so she could get a sense of the hard work that went into making weapons. But there was no cursing.
Rhys straightened.
Nesta hammered the blades.
All three, Cassian said. First the sword, then the dagger, and then the greatsword.
Rhys and Amryn exchanged a look. Cassian demanded, What? Rhys asked Amryn, Is it possible? Amryn gazed at the blades.
It has been such a long time, but yes.
Someone please explain,
Asriel said, peering at the three blades from a safe distance. Cassian forced himself to sit perfectly still as Rhys dragged a hand through his black hair.
Once the High Fae were more elemental, more given to reading the stars and crafting masterpieces of art and jewelry and weaponry. Their gifts were rawer, more connected to nature, and they could imbue objects with that power.
Cassian instantly knew where this was headed.
Nesta put her power in those swords?
No one has been able to create a magic sword in more than 10,000 years, Amryn said. The last one made, the great blade Gwydion, vanished around the time the last of the trove went missing.
This sword isn't Gwydion,
Cassian said, well aware of the myths regarding the sword. It had belonged to a true Fae High King in Prithian, as there had been in Highburn. He had united the lands, its people, and for a while, with that sword, peace had reigned, until he had been betrayed by his own queen and his fiercest general, and lost the sword to them, and the lands fell into darkness once more, never again to see another High King, only High Lords who ruled the territories that had once answered to the king.
Gwydion is gone,
Amryn said, a shade sadly, or has been gladly missing for millennia. She nodded toward the great sword.
This is something new.
Asriel said,
Nesta created a new magic sword.
Yes, Amryn said. Only the great powers could do that. Gwydion was given its powers when the High Priestess Oleana dipped it into the cauldron during its crafting. Cassian's blood chilled, waves rippling over his skin.
One touch from Nesta's magic while the blade was still hot?
And the blade was infused with it.
Nesta didn't know what she was doing, Cassian said. She was letting off some steam.
We
which might be worse, Amryn said. Who knows what emotions she poured into the blades with her power? It might have shaped them into instruments of such feelings, or it might have been the catalyst to release her power. There is no way of knowing.
So we use the sword, Cassian said, and figure it out.
No, Amryn countered sharply. I wouldn't dare draw these blades, especially not the great sword. I can feel power clustering there. Did you work on that one longest?
Yes.
Then it is to be treated as an object of the Dread Trove. A new trove.
You can't be serious.
Amryn's brows flattened. The Dread Trove was forged by the cauldron. Nesta possesses the cauldron's powers, so anything she crafts and imbues with her power becomes a new trove. At this point, I wouldn't so much as eat a piece of bread if she'd toasted it. They all stared at the three blades atop the desk. Azriel said,
People will kill for this power. Either kill her to stop it, or kill us to capture her.
Nesta forged a new trove, Cassian said, reining in his rage at the truth of Azriel's words. She could create anything. He nodded to Rhys. She could fill our arsenals with weapons that would win us any war. Briallen, Kosche, and Baron wouldn't stand a chance. Which is why Nesta must not learn about it, Amryn said. Cassian demanded,
What?
Amryn's gray eyes held steady. She cannot know.
Rhys said, That seems like a risk. What if, unaware, she creates more?
What if, in one of her moods, Amryn challenged, Nesta creates what she pleases just to spite us?
She'd never do that,
Cassian said hotly. He pointed at her. You fucking know it, too. Nesta would create not a Dread Trove, Amryn said, unfazed by his snarling, but a trove of nightmares.
I can't lie to her, Cassian said, looking to Rhys. I can't.
You don't need to lie, Amryn answered. Simply don't volunteer the information. He appealed to Rhys.
You're all right with this? Because I'm sure as hell not.
Amryn's order holds, Rhys said.
And for a heartbeat, Cassian hated him, hated the mistrust and wariness he beheld on Rhys's face. I'd be careful when you're fucking her, Amryn added, lips curling in a sneer. Who knows what she might transform you into when her emotions are high.
That's enough,
Azriel said. And Cassian turned grateful eyes to his brother. Az continued,
I'm with Cassian on this. It's not right to keep the knowledge from Nesta.
Rhys considered, then gazed long and hard at Cassian. Cassian weathered the look, kept his back straight and face grave. Rhys said at last,
When Feyre returns from her studio, I'll ask her. She'll be the deciding vote.
It was a compromise, and even Amryn could agree with that. Cassian nodded, uneasy but willing to let the decision lie in Feyre's hands. Amryn nestled back into her chair.
That sword shall be known by history.
Her eyes darkened as she looked at the great sword, her words echoing. It remains to be seen whether it shall be known for good or evil. Cassian shook off the shiver that slithered down his spine, as if fate itself heard her words and shuddered. He threw her a grin.
You do love to be dramatic, don't you?
Amryn scowled, then rose.
I'm going back to bed.
She pointed at Rhysand. Put those weapons somewhere no one will find them. And mother damn you if you dare unsheathe one. Rhys waved her off, bored and tired.
Of course.
I mean it, boy, Amryn said. Do not unsheathe those blades.
She surveyed all three of them before she left. any of you.
For a moment, only the ticking grandfather clock made a sound. Rhys looked toward it. Then he said, eyes distant,
I can't find anything to help Pharaoh with the baby, with the labor.
Cassian's chest tightened.
Draken and Miriam?
Rhys shook his head.
The Seraphim's wings are as flexible and rounded as the Illyrians are bony. That's what will kill Pharaoh. Miriam's children were able to pass through her birth canal because their wings bent easily. And nearly every one of her human people who's mixed with Draken's has had similar success.
Rhys's throat bobbed. His next words cracked Cassian's heart.
I didn't realize how much hope I'd been holding on to until I saw the pity and fear in their faces. Until Draken had to embrace me to keep me from falling apart.
Cassian crossed to his brother in a few steps. He clasped Rhys's shoulder, leaning against the edge of the desk.
We'll keep looking. What about Thiessen?
Rhys loosened the uppermost buttons on his black jacket, revealing a hint of the tattooed chest beneath.
The Dawn Court had nothing of use. The Peregrines are similar to the Seraphim. They're related, though distantly. Their healers know how to get a breech baby with wings to turn, how to get it out of the mother. But again, their wings are flexible.
Azrael appeared on Rhys's other side, a hand on his shoulder as well. The clock ticked on, a brutal reminder of every second racing toward sure doom. What they needed, Cassian realized with each tick of that clock, was a miracle. Azrael asked,
And Pharaoh still doesn't know?
No. She knows the labor will be difficult, but I haven't told her yet that it might very well claim her life.
Rhys spoke into their minds as if he couldn't say it aloud.
I haven't told her that the nightmares that now send me lurching from sleep aren't ones of the past, but of the future.
Cassian squeezed Rhys's shoulder.
Why won't you tell her?
Rhys's throat worked.
Because I can't bring myself to give her that fear, to take away one bit of the joy in her eyes every time she puts a hand on her belly.
His voice shook.
It's fucking eating me alive. This terror. I keep myself busy, but there's no one to bargain with for her life. No amount of wealth to buy it. Nothing that I can do to save her. Helion?
Azrael asked, eyes pained.
I told him before he left yesterday, pulled him aside when Pharaoh had winnowed home, and begged him on my knees to find something in his 1,000 libraries to save her. He said every head librarian and researcher who can be spared will be put on it. Somewhere in history, someone must have studied this, found a way to deliver a baby with wings to a mother whose body was not equipped for it.
We'll hold on to our hope then,
Cassian said. Rhys shuddered, hanging his head, his silken black hair obscuring his eyes. Cassian lifted his stare to Azrael, whose face conveyed everything. Hope wouldn't keep Pharaoh alive. Cassian swallowed hard and shifted his gaze to the three blades on the desk. Their hilts were ordinary, as might be expected from a blacksmith in a small village. He made fine weapons, yes, but not artistic masterpieces. The great sword's hilt was a simple crossguard, the pommel a rounded bit of metal. Gwydion, the last of the magic swords, had been dark as night and as beautiful. How many games had Cassian played as a child with Rhys and Azrael, where a long stick had been a stand-in for Gwydion?
How many adventures had they imagined, sharing that mythical sword between them as they slew worms and rescued damsels? Never mind that Rhys's particular damsel had slain a worm herself and rescued him instead. But if Amryn was right, Cassian couldn't think of another place in the world that held three magic blades, let alone one. These might very well be the only ones in existence. Cassian drummed his fingers on the desk, curiosity biting deep.
Let's have a look. Amryn said not to,
Asriel warned.
Amryn's not here, Cassian said, smirking,
and we don't need to touch them. He clapped Rhys on the shoulder.
Use that fancy magic to unsheathe them.
Rhys lifted his head.
This is a bad idea.
Cassian winked.
That should be written on the Night Court crest.
A few stars blinked into existence in Rhys's eyes. Asriel muttered a prayer, but Rhys took two steadying breaths and unspooled his power toward the massive sword, letting it lift the blade in star-flecked hands.
It's heavy,
Rhys observed, brows bunched in concentration.
In a way it should not be. Like it's fighting against my magic.
He kept the sword floating above his desk, perpendicular to it, as if it were held in a stand. Cassian braced himself as Rhys angled his head, his magic probing the hilt, the scabbard. Rhys mused.
The blacksmith never said anything about what had seemed cursed, and he must have touched it several times to feel the power and bring it here at least. So it can't be a death sword to slay any careless hand.
Asriel grunted.
I'd still be careful.
With a wicked smile toward Az, Rhys used his power to draw away the black scabbard. It did not go easily, as if the sword did not wish to be revealed, or not by Rhysand. But inch by inch, the scabbard slid from the blade, and inch by inch, fresh steel glowed, truly glowed, like moonlight lay within the metal. Even Az didn't school his features into anything but gaping awe as the scabbard fell away at last. Cassian stumbled back, gawking. Iridescent sparks danced along the blade. Pure, crackling magic. The light danced and spurted as if an invisible hammer still struck it. The hair on Cassian's body rose. Rhys inhaled, rallying his magic, then floated and unsheathed the other sword and the dagger. They did not spark with raw power, but Cassian could feel them. The dagger radiated cold, its blade gleaming so bright it looked like an icicle in the sun. The second sword seemed hot, angry, and willful. But the great sword between the two others, the sparks faded, as if sucked into the blade itself. None of them dared touch it. Something deep and primal within Cassian warned him not to. That to be impaled or sliced by that blade would be no ordinary wound. A soft female laugh rippled from the door, and Cassian didn't need to turn around to know Amryn stood there. I knew you idiots wouldn't be able to resist. Rhys murmured, I have never seen anything like this. His magic set the three blades to rotating, allowing them to observe every facet, as his face was still slack with awe.
Amarantha destroyed one,
Amryn said. Cassian started.
I never heard that.
Amryn amended.
Rumor claimed she dumped one into the sea.
It would not come to Amarantha's hand, nor the hands of any of her commanders, and rather than let the King of Hybern attain it, she disposed of it. Asriel asked,
Which sword?
Narbin. Amryn's red lips quirked downward.
At least that's what rumor said. You were under the mountain then, Rhys. She would have kept it secret. I only heard from a fleeting water nymph that it had been done.
Narbin was even older than Gwydion, Rhys said.
Where the hell was it?
I don't know, but she found it, and when it would not bend to her, she destroyed it, as she did all good things. It was as much as Amryn would say about that terrible time.
It was perhaps in our favor. Had the King of Hybern possessed Narbin, I fear we would have lost the war. Narbin's powers had not been the holy savior's light of Gwydion, but ones far darker.
I can't believe that witch threw it into the sea, Cassian said.
Again, it was a rumor, heard from someone who heard it from someone. Who knows if she actually found Narbin? Even if it would not obey her, she'd have been a fool to throw it away.
Amarantha could be short-sighted, Rhys said.
Cassian hated the sound of her name on his brother's tongue. From the flare of rage on Asriel's face, so did the Shadow Singer. But you, Rhysand, are not.
Amryn nodded to the still rotating weapons.
With these three blades, you could make yourself High King. The words clanged through the room. Cassian slowly blinked.
Rhys said tightly, I do not wish to be High King. I only wish to be here with my mate and my people.
Amryn countered, all seven courts united under one ruler would give us far better odds of survival in any upcoming conflict. No bickering and politicking required to dispatch our armies. Malcontents like Baron would have no ability to threaten our plans by allying with our enemies.
We would have to fight an internal war first. I would be branded a traitor by my friends in other courts. I'd be forced to make them kneel.
Asriel stepped forward, shadows trailing from his shoulders.
Callias, Tarquin, and Helion might be willing to kneel. Theson will kneel if the others do.
Cassian nodded. Rhys as High King. He could think of no other male he'd trust more. No other male who would be a fairer ruler than Rhys. And with Feyre as High Queen, Prithian would be blessed to have such leaders.
So Cassian said, Tamlin would probably fight and lose. Baron would be the only one standing in your way.
Rhys's teeth flashed.
Baron is already standing in my way and doing a damn good job of it. I have no interest in justifying his behavior.
He gave Cassian a withering look.
Don't we have to leave soon to winnow you and Nesta down to the Spring Court to meet with Eris?
Don't change the subject, Cassian drawled. Rhys's power rumbled in the room.
I do not want to be High King. There is no need to discuss it.
Yours is a terrible and beautiful power, Rhysand, Amryn said, sighing. You have three magic blades before you, each a kingmaker in its own right. And yet you would rather share that power. Keep to your borders.
Why?
Rhys demanded.
Why do you want me to turn conqueror?
Amryn shot back.
Why do you shy away from the power that is your birthright?
I did nothing to earn that power, Rhys said. I was born with it. It is a tool to defend my people, not to attack others.
He surveyed them. Where is this talk coming from?
Asriel said quietly,
We are weakened, all seven courts, even more at odds with each other and with the rest of the world since the war. If Montessere and Valahan march on us, if Rask joins with them, we will not withstand it, not with Baron already turned against us and allied with Briallen, not if Tamlin cannot master his guilt and grief and become what he once was.
Cassian picked up the thread,
tucking in his wings.
But a land united under one king and queen, armed with such power and objects, our enemies would hesitate.
Rhys snarled. If you think for one moment that Pharaoh would be remotely interested in being High Queen, you're delusional.
Amron said, Pharaoh would see it as a necessary evil to protect your child from being born into war. She would do what is necessary.
And I won't?
Rhys demanded, standing. I will not be High King. I will not consider it. Not today. And not in a century. Amron looked to the great sword still slowly rotating above them.
Then explain to me why, after thousands of years, objects that once crowned and aided the old Fae have returned. The last time a High King ruled Prithian, it was with a magic sword in his hand. Look at that great sword before you, Rhysand. And tell me that it is not a sign from the cauldron itself.
Cassian's breath caught in his throat.
It was a fluke, Amron. Nesta didn't make it on purpose.
Amron shook her head, hair swaying.
Nothing is a fluke. The cauldron's power flows through Nesta and could use her as a puppet without her knowledge. It wanted those weapons made, and thus they were made.
It wanted Rhysand to have them, and thus the blacksmith brought them to you.
To you, Rhysand, not to Nesta.
And do not forget that Nesta herself, and Elaine, with whatever powers she has, is here. Feyre is here. All three sisters, blessed by fate and gifted with powers to match your own. Feyre alone doubles your strength. Nesta makes you unstoppable, especially if she were to march into battle wearing the mask. No enemy could stand against her. She'd slay Baron's soldiers, then raise them from the dead and turn them on him.
Cassian's blood chilled.
Yes, Nesta would be unstoppable, but at what cost to her soul?
Rhys leveled a cool stare at Amron.
I will not entertain this ridiculous notion for another moment.
Cassian knew they'd been dismissed. He nodded to Az, who followed him toward the doors. They paused, however, right before the threshold, looked back at their brother, their High Lord, now seated alone at his desk, the weight of so many choices pressing heavy on his broad shoulders, drooping his wings.
Very well then, Rhysand.
Amron also turned from the desk, and the blades Rhys's magic now sheathed and set upon the surface. But know that the cauldron's benevolence will be extended to you only for so long before it's offered to another. Chapter 43. Breathing in the heady, sweet scent of the purple lilac bush blooming behind them, Nesta glanced sidelong at Cassian. She could have sworn he was subtly scratching himself whenever she turned away to admire the sheer beauty and peace of the Spring Court forest. Rhys had winnowed them here, silent and stone-faced, then vanished. Cassian hadn't seemed disturbed by it, though, so Nesta hadn't asked. Especially not as they waited for Eris to appear at any moment. Nesta feigned gazing toward a bramble of roses, then whipped her head back to Cassian to find him indeed, scratching at his arms.
What is wrong with you?
I hate this place, he muttered, flushing. Allergies.
Nesta swallowed a laugh. You don't need to hide it from me. In the human realm, I used to get so itchy I had to take 2 baths a day to get rid of all the pollen.
Well, before they'd gone to the cottage.
After that, Nesta had been lucky to bathe once a week, thanks to the hassle of heating and hauling so much water to the lone tub in a corner of their bedroom. Sometimes she and Elaine had even shared the same bath water, drawing straws for who went in second. Nesta's throat constricted, and she surveyed the swaying cherry blossoms overhead. Elaine would love this place. So many flowers, all in bloom, so much green, the light, vibrant green of new grass, so many birds singing, and such warm, buttery sunshine. Nesta felt like a storm cloud standing amid it all. But Elaine? The spring court had been made for someone like her. Too bad her sister refused to see her. Nesta would have told Elaine to visit this place.
And too bad the lord who ruled these lands was a piece of shit.
Eris is late, Nesta said to Cassian. They'd been waiting 10 minutes.
Do you think he's coming?
He's likely sipping some tea, enjoying the fact that we're here waiting for him, Cassian considered.
Well, he only knows I'm coming, but he'll enjoy the thought of making me wait.
He's a bastard. The few times she'd met the High Lord of Autumn's son, Nesta had detested the preening, cold-faced male, exactly the sort of person who would abandon an injured Morrigan in the woods.
Are you talking about me? Or the brute beside you?
A deep, smooth voice said from the shadows of a budding dogwood. And there he was, as if her thoughts had conjured him. Eris dressed as immaculately as Rhysand, not a strand of his long red hair out of place. But though Eris's angular features were handsome, no light shone in his eyes, no joy. Those eyes landed on Nesta, raking from her braided hair to her leathers to her boots.
Hello, Nesta Archeron.
Nesta met the male's stare. She said nothing, letting cool contempt freeze over her gaze. Eris's mouth quirked upward, but the expression vanished as he turned to Cassian.
I hear you have something to tell me regarding my soldiers.
Cassian crossed his arms.
Good news and bad news, Eris. Take your pick.
Bad. Always the bad first. Eris's smile was full of poison.
Most of your soldiers are dead.
Eris only blinked.
And the good news?
Two of them survived. Nesta studied every minute shift on Eris's face. Rage glimmering in his eyes, displeasure in his pursed lips, annoyance in the fluttering of a muscle in his jaw, as if countless questions were racing through his mind. Eris's voice remained flat, though.
And who did this?
Cassian grimaced.
Technically, Azriel and I did. Your soldiers were enchanted by Queen Briallen and Kosche to be mindless killers. They attacked us in the Bog of Urid, and we were left with no choice but to kill them. And yet, two survived.
How convenient.
I assume they received Azriel's particular brand of interrogation.
Eris's voice dripped disdain.
We could only manage to contain two, Cassian said tightly. Under Briallen's influence, they were practically rabid. Let's not lie to ourselves. You only bothered to contain two by the time your brute bloodlust ebbed away.
Nesta saw red at the words, and Cassian sucked in a breath.
We did what we could. There were 24 of them.
Eris snorted.
There were certainly more than that. And you could have easily spared more than two. But I don't know why I'd expect someone like you to have done any better.
Do you want me to apologize? Cassian snarled. Nesta's heart began to pound wildly at the anger darkening his voice, the pain brightening his eyes.
He regretted it. He hadn't liked killing those soldiers. Did you even try to spare the others? Or did you just launch right into a massacre?
Eris seethed. Cassian hesitated. Nesta could have sworn she saw the words land their blow.
No, Cassian had not hesitated. Nesta knew he hadn't,
He would never hesitate to save someone he loved from an enemy, no matter what it cost him. Nesta took one step closer to Eris.
Your soldiers shot an ash arrow through one of Azrael's wings.
Eris's teeth flashed.
And did you join in this massacre too?
No, she said frankly. But I wonder, did Briallen arm the soldiers with those ash arrows? Or did they come from your private armory?
Eris blinked, the only confirmation required.
Such weapons are banned, aren't they? She asked Cassian,
whose features remained taut. The conflagration within her burned hotter, higher.
She returned her attention to Eris. If he could toy with Cassian, then she'd return the favor.
Who were you storing those arrows for? She mused. Enemies abroad?
She smiled slightly. Or an enemy at home? Eris held her stare.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Nesta's smile didn't waver. Would an ash arrow through the heart kill a High Lord?
Eris's face paled. You're wasting my time, Nesta shrugged.
And you're wasting ours. For all we know, you bespelled your soldiers to kill us, claimed your hounds found sense at the sight of their disappearance, that linked it to Briallen, and then lied about Baron's alliance. Perhaps you even got Morgan's father to delay his visit to Valaris as a piece in a grand scheme to gain our trust. All part of your game.
Cassian's gaze was a physical touch on her face, but she kept her attention on the stiff-backed Eris.
If you want to play warmonger, go right ahead, Eris.
Her smile widened. I like an interesting opponent.
I am not your enemy, Eris spat, and Nesta knew she'd won. From the brush of Cassian's fingers at the small of her back, he knew too.
Cassian said, I regret that I couldn't save more of your soldiers, Eris. I really do. The remaining two will be sent back to you today, though they remain in the crown's thrall. But I'm not your enemy either. Briallen and Kostje are our enemies, both of ours. If the families of those soldiers need anything, I will gladly give what I can to help them.
Something like pride bloomed in her at Cassian's earnest words. He'd give all he had to those families, if it would right this wrong.
Eris glanced between them, noted the hand on her back, what Cassian had left exposed. Eris said to Nesta with a smirk, You're a pretty little treat. I'd be happy to play any manner of game with you, Nesta Archeron.
Cassian's fingers tightened on her back. Eris seemed to sense that, too. Did Cassian have any idea of the things he left vulnerable for people like Eris to strike at? He lived too honestly, too boldly, to notice or care. She couldn't help but admire it.
When you get tired of the animal, Eris said to her, jerking his chin toward Cassian, come find me. I'll show you how a future High Lord plays.
Cassian growled, opening his mouth, but halted. Eris went still as well. Nesta felt it a heartbeat later, the presence creeping toward them on soft paws. Cassian shoved her behind him, just as a golden-furred beast with curling horns leaped from behind the brambles, landing in the forest clearing. She'd never forget that beast, how it had broken down the door of their cottage and terrified her to her bones. How all she'd been able to think of was shielding Elaine while Feyre grabbed that knife to face it. Face him. Tamlin. Green eyes assessed them, marked Eris, then Cassian, then her. Tamlin snarled low and deep. And Cassian's siphons flared.
We were just leaving, Cassian said with steady calm,
hand reaching for Nesta's. He'd launch them into the air, but would he be fast enough to avoid Tamlin's claws or power? Tamlin's gaze remained on her, raging and hateful. This was the male, the beast, her sister had once loved, had given up everything, including her mortal life, to save, who had taken her love and twisted it, nearly breaking Feyre in the process, until Rhys, until Cassian and the others had helped bring her back, helped her learn to love herself once more. Nesta didn't care if he'd come to help during the final battle with Highburn. Tamlin had hurt Feyre, unforgivably. It had never concerned her before. Irked her, yes, but... Nesta found her fingers curling, found her lips peeling back from her teeth as she snarled. Her youngest sister had been taken by this male because Nesta herself hadn't been able to face him. Tamlin had even looked at her and asked if she'd go in Feyre's place. And she'd said no, because she was a hateful, horrible coward. She could not be a coward now. Nesta let an ember of her power glow in her eyes, let Tamlin see it as she said, "You will not touch us."
"I have every right to kill trespassers on my lands."
The words were guttural, nearly impossible to understand, as if Tamlin had not spoken in a long while. "Are these still your lands?" Nesta asked coolly, stepping out from behind Cassian. "Last I heard, you don't bother to rule them anymore." Eris remained utterly still. He'd been caught meeting with them, she realized. If Tamlin told anyone, Nesta said,
"I suggest you keep your maw shut about this."
Tamlin bristled, hackles rising.
"You're exactly as nasty as your sister said you were."
Nesta laughed. "I'd hate to disappoint." She held his emerald stare, knowing silver flames flickered in her own.
"I went into the cauldron because of you," she said softly, and could have sworn thunder grumbled in the distance.
Cassian and Eris faded away into nothing. There was only Tamlin, only this beast, and what he had done to her and her family. "Elaine went into the cauldron because of you," Nesta went on. Her fingertips heated, and she knew if she looked down, she'd find silver embers flaring there.
"I don't care how much you apologize or try to atone for it, or claim you didn't know the King of Highburn would do such a thing, or that you begged him not to do it. You colluded with him because you thought Feyre was your property."
Nesta pointed at Tamlin. The ground shook. Cassian swore behind her. Tamlin shrank from her outstretched finger, claws digging into the earth.
"Put that finger down, you witch."
Nesta smiled. "I'm glad you remember what happened to the last person I pointed at." She lowered her arm. "We're going now." She stepped back to where Cassian was already waiting, arms open. He wrapped them around her waist. Nesta glanced to Eris, who gave her a shallow, approving nod, then vanished. Nesta said to Tamlin before they shot into the skies, "Tell anyone you saw us, High Lord, and I'll rip your head from your body, too." Nesta stared into the pit of darkness at the bottom of the library. She'd been unable to sleep, barely able to keep from returning to the encounter with Tamlin all day. Cassian had flown to the river house and had not returned. Perhaps Rhys had gone to ensure Tamlin's silence about their scheming with Eris. Maybe Rhys would do them all a favor and turn Tamlin's mind into jelly.
Nesta rested her arms on the railing of level 5, letting her head hang. This late, no one was up, and she didn't know where the dormitories were, so she couldn't seek out Gwyn. Not that she'd want to wake her friend. She doubted Gwyn would want to hear her problems anyway. A glass of warm milk appeared on the railing beside her. Nesta peered at the dim library. "Thank you," she said to the house. The spring court had felt stagnant, hollow, empty despite its growing life. But this house was alive. It welcomed her, wanted her to grow and thrive. It was a place where she might rest or explore, where she could be whoever and whatever she wished. Was that what home was? She had never learned. But this place, yes, home might be a good name for it. Perhaps that was what Feyre had felt too, when she'd left the Spring Court and come to these lands. Perhaps Feyre had fallen in love with this court as much as she had its ruler. Something stirred in the darkness below. Nesta straightened, milk forgotten. There, in the heart of the black pit, like a tendril of smoke, something moved. It seemed to expand and contract, throbbing a wild beat. "I thought I'd find you here. Well, either here or the stairs to the city." Cassian's voice sounded behind her, and Nesta whirled. He went on alert, but Nesta glanced over a shoulder toward the darkness. Nothing. It was gone. Or she'd imagined it. "It's nothing," she said, as he peered over the railing. "Just shadows." Cassian blew out a breath, leaning against the railing.
"Can't sleep?"
"I keep thinking about Tamlin."
"You did well with him. And you did well against Eris, too. I don't think he'll forget that anytime soon."
"He's a snake."
"Glad we agree on something."
Nesta huffed a laugh. "I didn't appreciate him speaking to you like that."
"It's how a lot of people speak to me."
"That doesn't make it right." She had spoken to him like that. She had said far worse things to Cassian than Eris had. Her throat tightened, but she said, "I can't believe Feyre ever loved Tamlin."
"Tamlin never deserved her."
Cassian rested a hand on her back. "No." Nesta again peered into the darkness below. "He didn't."
Chapter 44.
"Someone remind me why this was a good idea." Gwyn panted beside Nesta, sweat running along her face as they went over their basic sword work. "Remind me too," Emery grunted. Nesta, too winded to speak, simply grunted with her. Cassian chuckled, and the sound raked itself down her body. He'd taken her hand in the library last night, leading her up to her room, his eyes still soft. But that had faded when he'd spied a copy of Gwyn's chapters about the Valkyries on Nesta's desk. She'd been reading about them, she'd explained, when he'd picked up the pages and leafed through them. His only answer had been to kiss her, deeply, before lying on the bed, positioning her above his face, so he could feast on her leisurely. Nesta endured all of about a minute until she'd needed to touch him, and had pivoted, letting him continue devouring her, while she'd stretched down his body and taken him into her mouth. She'd never done that. Feasted and been feasted upon? And he'd come on her tongue just before she'd come on his. They'd waited only a short time, panting in silence on her bed, before she climbed over him, stroking him with her hand, then her mouth. And when he was ready, she'd sunk onto him, taking in each marvelous thick inch. With him stretching and filling her so deliciously, she'd climaxed swiftly. He'd chased her pleasure with his own, gripping her hips and bucking into her, hitting that perfect spot, and sending her climaxing again. She'd been slightly, pleasantly sore this morning, and he'd winked at her across the breakfast table, as if aware of how tender certain areas were while sitting. There was no trace of that smug satisfaction now, as Cassian said to them,
"I'd thought today would be a good day to integrate the eight-pointed star, but if you're already complaining, we can wait until next week."
"We're not complaining," Gwyn said, sucking in air. "You're just running us ragged." The newest priestesses working with Az were already wobbling on exhausted legs. Cassian caught Nesta's stare.
"Some Valkyrie unit you have."
Gwyn whirled on Nesta.
"You told him?"
"No," Nesta and Cassian said together. Cassian added,
"You think I haven't noticed the breathing techniques that let you get that calm, steady look, even when me and Az are pissing you off? I sure as hell didn't teach you that. I can recognize mind-stilling a mile off."
They just gawked at him. Then Gwyn asked, "You know the technique?"
"Of course I do. I fought beside the Valkyries in the war."
Stunned silence rippled. Nesta had forgotten how old these Fae were, how much Cassian had seen and lived through. She cleared her throat.
"You knew the Valkyries personally?"
Gwyn let out a high-pitched noise that was nothing but pure excitement. Azriel, on the other side of the ring with the rest of the priestesses, half turned at the sound, brows high. Cassian flashed a grin.
"I fought beside the Valkyries for 5 battles, but that stopped at the Battle of Mainir Pass."
His smile faded.
"When most of them died to save it. The Valkyries knew it was a suicide mission from the start."
Azriel returned to his charges, but Nesta had a feeling the Shadow Singer monitored every word, every gesture from his brother. Even Gwyn stopped smiling.
"Why did they fight then? Everyone there knew it would be a slaughter, but I've never been able to find anything on the politics behind it."
"I don't know. I was a grunt for an Illyrian legion. I wasn't privy to any of the leaders' discussions."
He looked to Nesta, who was gaping at him.
"But I had friends who fell that day."
The way he hesitated on friends made her wonder if any had been more than that. And even though they were honorable fallen dead, something ugly twisted in her chest.
"The Valkyries fought when even the bravest males would not. The Illyrians tried to forget that. I fought against males who were my superiors, arguing to help the Valkyries. They beat me senseless, chained me to a supply wagon, and left me there. When I came to, the battle was over. The Valkyries slain."
This was the male she'd taken to her bed, who'd left again last night without kissing her goodbye.
"Why didn't you mention this when you saw the pages about them on my desk?"
"You didn't ask."
He unsheathed his Illyrian blade.
"Enough history."
He drew 4 lines in the dirt, all intersecting to form an 8-pointed star.
"This is your map for striking with a sword. These 8 maneuvers. You've learned 6 of them, you'll learn the other 2 today, and we'll start on the combinations."
Gwyn asked, "Why don't we use the Valkyrie techniques, if you admired them so much?"
"Because I don't know them."
Nesta smirked. "If we are to be Valkyries born again," she said, "maybe we should combine the Illyrian and Valkyrie techniques." She'd meant it in jest, but the words rumbled through the space, as if she'd spoken some great truth, something that made fate sit up. Azriel turned to them fully this time, eyes narrowed, like those shadows had whispered something to him. A chill breathed down Nesta's spine. Cassian stared into their faces, like he beheld something he hadn't seen there before. At last, he said thickly,
"Today, we learn Illyrian techniques."
He nodded to Gwyn.
"Tomorrow, you bring me whatever information you have on the Valkyrie's style."
"It's an enormous amount," Gwyn said.
Meryl is writing a book on it. I could get you a copy of the current manuscript, since it has most of the information in one place. Cassian seemed to gain control of whatever emotion had taken hold of him, for he rubbed his jaw. Nesta's blood thrummed in response. Something new, he said, more to himself than to them. Something old becoming something new. He grinned again, and Nesta found her mouth twitching to answer with a grin of her own, especially as Cassian's eyes brightened. All right, ladies. First lesson about Valkyries. They don't whine about being sweaty.
Valkyries?
Feyre asked from across the dining table in the river house, fork half raised to her lips.
Truly?
Truly,
Cassian said, sipping from his wine at dinner that evening. He'd come down to the manor to discuss what to do with the weapons Nesta had made, to learn what Feyre's vote would be. She hadn't hesitated before saying that Nesta should be informed. But when she'd volunteered to tell her, Cassian had stepped in. He'd tell Nesta when the moment was right. The only one who hadn't voted was Mor, who remained in Valahan to keep coaxing its rulers to sign the new treaty, her absence marked by a place of honor set for her at the table.
We never heard of them in the human lands,
Elaine said. She'd been as riveted as Feyre to hear Cassian tell of it, first of Nesta and the others' interest, then of the brief history of the female fighters.
They must have been fearsome creatures.
Some were as lovely as you, Elaine,
Rhys said from beside Feyre.
From the outside. But once they set foot into the arena of battle, they became as bloodthirsty as Amarin.
Amarin lifted her glass in salute. I liked those females. Never let a male boss them around, though I could have done without their foolish king. He is as much to blame for their deaths as the Illyrians who walked away during that battle.
I can't argue with that,
Cassian said. It had taken him a long, long time to get over that battle. He'd never been back to that pass in the Golian Mountains, but rumor claimed its rocks remained barren, as if the earth still mourned the females who'd given their lives with no hesitation, who had laughed at death and embraced life so fully. His first lover beyond the Night Court's borders had been from the Valkyries' ranks, a bold-hearted female named Tanwyn, with a smile like a storm. She'd ridden into that battle at the head of the Valkyries and had never come out of the pass. Cassian added after a moment,
Nesta would have fit in well with them.
I always thought she was born on the wrong side of the wall, Elaine admitted. She made ballrooms into battlefields and plotted like any general. Like you two, she said, nodding to Cassian and then a bit more shyly to Asriel.
Asriel offered her a small smile that Elaine quickly looked away from. Cassian tucked away his puzzlement. Lucian was certainly not here to snarl at any male who looked at her for too long. Feyre, at last, took her hearty bite of food.
Nesta is a wolf who has been locked in a cage her whole life.
I know,
Cassian said. She was a wolf who had never learned how to be a wolf, thanks to that cage humans called propriety in society. And like any maltreated animal, she bit anyone who came near. Good thing he liked being bitten. Good thing he savored the bruises and scratches she left on his body every night, and that her unleashing, when he was buried in her, made him want to answer it with his own. Elaine leaned forward.
You only think you know. You haven't seen her on the dance floor. That's when Nesta truly lets the wolf roam free, when there's music.
Really?
Nesta had told him once, when he'd dragged her out of a particular seedy tavern, that she'd been there for the music.
He'd ignored her, thinking it an excuse.
Yes, Elaine said. She was trained to dance from a very young age. She loves it, and music. Not in the way I enjoy a waltz or a gavotte, but in the way that performers make an art of it. Nesta could bring an entire ballroom to a halt when she danced with someone. Cassian set down his wine.
She mentioned dance lessons to me a few weeks ago.
He'd assumed those lessons were why Nesta had quickly mastered her footwork and balance, despite her initial difficulty. The muscle memory must have remained intact. But if dance had been drilled into her as ruthlessly as he'd learned to fight, she wouldn't have gone into much detail about it, Elaine said. Nesta was only 14 at the last ball we went to before, well, before we were poor. Elaine shook her head. Another young heiress was at the ball, and she positively hated me. She was several years older, and I'd never done anything to provoke her hatred, but I think
she was jealous of your beauty, Amryn said, an amused smile on her red lips.
Elaine blushed.
Perhaps.
It was definitely that, even though Elaine would have been barely 13 at the time.
Well, Nesta saw how she treated me, her casual cruelties and snubs, and bided her time. Waited until that ball, when a handsome duke from the continent was there to find a bride. His family had run out of money, which is why he'd deigned to come over at all, to nab a rich bride to refill their estate coffers. Nesta knew the heiress had her sights set on him. The girl had bragged about it to all of us in the powder room at every ball for weeks leading up to it. Nesta spent a small fortune on her gown and jewels for that night. Our father was always too scared of her to say no, and that night, well, she truly looked the part of the daughter of the Prince of Merchants. An amethyst silk gown with gold thread, diamonds and pearls at her neck and ears. Elaine sighed. Such wealth. Cassian had never realized what wealth they'd possessed and lost. The entire ball stopped when Nesta entered, Elaine said. She made an entrance of it, perfectly cool and aloof, even at 14. She barely glanced the Duke's way, because she'd learned about him as well, knew he grew bored of anyone that chased him, and knew that the wealth on her that night dwarfed anything that heiress was wearing.
Amryn was grinning now. Nesta tried to win a duke out of spite at 14.
Elaine didn't smile. She lured him into asking her for a dance with a few well-placed looks across the ballroom. The same waltz that heiress wanted for herself, had boasted would be all she needed to secure his marriage bid. Nesta took that dance from her, and then took the Duke from her, too. Nesta danced that night like she was one of you.
If you've seen Cassian's dancing, Rhys muttered, that's not saying much.
Cassian flipped off his High Lord as Feyre and Az chuckled. Elaine continued, voice hushed with near reverence.
The Duke was so vain, and Nesta played into that. The entire room came to a standstill. Their dancing was that good. She was that beautiful. And when it ended, I knew she was an artist then. The same way Feyre is, but what Feyre does with paint, that's what Nesta did with music and dance. Our mother saw it when we were children and honed it into a weapon. All so Nesta might one day marry a prince.
Cassian froze. A prince? Was that what Nesta wanted?
His stomach clenched.
What happened to the Duke?
Azriel asked.
Elaine grimaced. He proposed marriage the next morning.
Rhys choked on his wine.
She was 14.
I told you. Nesta is a very good dancer. But that was what my father said. She was too young. It was a graceful exit since my father, despite his faults, knew Nesta well. He knew she had taunted that duke into making a marriage offer, just to punish the heiress for her cruelty toward me. Nesta had no interest in him, knew she was far too young, even if the duke seemed more interested in just reserving her until she was old enough.
Elaine shuddered with distaste.
but I think some part of Nesta believed she would indeed marry a prince one day. So the Duke went home with no bride, and that heiress, well, she was one of the people who delighted in our misfortunes.
I'd forgotten, Thera murmured, about this and about her dancing.
Nesta never spoke of it afterward, Elaine said. I just observed.
Nesta was wrong, Cassian realized, to think Elaine as loyal and loving as a dog. Elaine saw every single thing Nesta had done and understood why.
Amran asked pointedly, so your mother twisted Nesta's creative joys into a social climber's arsenal?
Feyre cut in. Our mother was not what one would call a pleasant person. Nesta has made her own choices, but our mother laid the groundwork.
Elaine nodded, folding her hands in her lap.
So, I'm very pleased to hear of this Valkyrie business. I'm happy that Nesta finds interest in something again, and might channel all of that into it.
That, Cassian knew, meant her rage, her fierce and unyielding loyalty to those she loved, her wolf's instincts and ability to kill. They moved on to far merrier subjects, but Cassian mulled it over throughout the evening. The fighting was only one part of it. The training would sustain her, funnel that rage. But there had to be more. There had to be joy. There had to be music.
Chapter 45.
I think the Valkyries are even more sadistic than the Illyrians, Gwyn grunted. And Nesta could see the priestess's legs shaking as she held the pose that had been illustrated in one of her many research volumes. No amount of mind-stilling will get me through these exercises. What was the phrase they used? I am the rock against which the surf crashes. A rock never had to hold a lunge, though. This is outrageous, Emery agreed, teeth gritted.
Cassian idly flipped a long dagger in his hand.
I warned you that they were stone-cold warriors.
Nesta panted through her teeth in a steady rhythm.
My legs might break.
You three still have 20 seconds.
Cassian looked to the clock Azrael had dragged up from the house and left on the water station table. The Shadow Singer was away today, but the priestesses he usually trained had been left with a strict lesson plan. Nesta's legs wobbled and burned, but she rooted her strength through her toes, focusing on her breathing, her breathing, her breathing, as the mind-stilling had bade her to do. She sought that place of calm, where she might be beyond her thoughts of pain and her shaking body. And it was so close, so near. If she could just concentrate, breathe more deeply.
Time,
Cassian declared, and the three of them collapsed onto the dirt. He laughed again.
Pathetic.
You try it, Gwyn panted, lying prone on the earth. I don't think even you could survive that.
Thanks to the passages you sent me last night, I was here at dawn doing the exercises myself,
he said. Nesta raised her brows. He hadn't been at dinner, hadn't sought her out, but she'd been tired enough after a few nights of little sleep that she hadn't minded.
I figured if I'm going to torture you three, I should at least be able to back it up.
He winked.
For exactly the moment when you groused that I should suffer alongside you.
No wonder you look like that, Emery muttered, turning over to lie on her back and gaze at the crisp autumn sky. The days had given up any attempt at being warm, though true cold had not yet set in. The sun offered a kernel of heat against the chill breeze, a buttery, bone-heating warmth that Nesta savored as she too lay on her back.
I'll take that as a compliment.
His grin tightened something low in Nesta's gut. He caught her staring, and that grin became a little more knowing, but he just said to her,
If you were to name a sword, what would you call it?
Gwyn answered, though she hadn't been asked.
Silver Majesty.
Emery snorted.
Really?
Gwyn demanded, what would you call it?
Emery considered.
Foe Slayer, or something. Something intimidating.
That's no better.
Nesta's mouth tugged upward at their teasing. Gwyn looked to her, teal eyes bright.
Which one is worse, Foe Slayer or Silver Majesty?
Silver Majesty, Nesta said, and Emery crowed with triumph. Gwyn waved a hand, booing.
What would you call it?
Cassian asked Nesta again.
What do you want to know?
Humor me.
She lifted a brow, but then said, with all sincerity, killer.
His brows flattened.
Nesta shrugged.
I don't know. Is it necessary to name a sword?
Just tell me, if you had to name a sword, what would you call it?
Are you getting her one as a winter solstice present?
Emery asked.
No.
Nesta hid her smile. She loved this, when the three of them ganged up on him, like lionesses around a very muscled, very attractive.